The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, to recap so far, the Dharma, yesterday I talked about the first two qualities of the Dharma that are in this list, that it's well proclaimed, that it's useful throughout all stages of practice, and that it's visible here and now. We can see it unfold in our daily life experience, and that's the only place really where it is visible in our daily life experience, in our practice. And those are the first two qualities of these six. And in order to make use of the Dharma, in order to see it here and now, we need to develop a capacity for mindfulness, for sustained attention, sustained focused attention is what the essay that I'm referring to pointed to. The ability to stay connected to our present moment experience, to see the ways that suffering, that dukkha, that stress, to see the ways that it arises, and also to see the way that it ceases. And then we need to be willing to not give up to when we forget, when we get distracted, when we get bored or resistant. And this essay that I'm referring to this week called that a tolerance for failure, speaking about students reading texts. But I don't really like to use the word failure in regard to practice. Obstacles, maybe bumps in the road, you know, we don't let them deter us. So today I want to talk about the third and the fourth qualities of the Dharma in this list, along with the capacities that support them. And the third quality is that the Dharma is immediately effective. And that's, of course, related to it being visible here and now. We can see it, and then we can see that it works as well. And I mentioned yesterday an analogy that I've heard Gil use before about having a pebble in your shoe. What's immediately effective is bending down, taking off my shoe, getting the pebble out. There is immediate relief. I see the dukkha, I remove the cause, and the dukkha ceases. In our Dharma practice, we might not discern so quickly the choice of which Dharma prescription to apply. You know, mindfulness, compassion, or metta, or ethical behavior, truthfulness as taking off a shoe, you know, especially early on in practice. If I have a tendency, which I have had in the past, to get impatient with my partner, I can practice restraint and patience. I can investigate my impatience, and then I can see how it's really creating stress for me, and it's not really having any effect on how my partner washes the dishes, for example. It might take some time for me to actively recognize that being patient relieves the stress, actually relieves the stress. But when I see it here and now, then I can see that patience has been immediately effective. Recognizing the stress of impatience and the release that comes through dropping it is, you know, it's seeing the Four Noble Truths in action. So sometimes it's clear what would be immediately effective, and the result is immediately visible. Sitting in meditation, for example, and like I invite every morning, and like most Dharma teachers will invite, being mindful to our breath, noticing tension in our neck or jaw, we can begin to relax it, to let it go, let the pebbles of stress fall away. And as practice matures and we develop more sensitivity to our inner state, we see this kind of immediate effect applied in more and more subtle experiences, to very mild emotions and subtle moods, subtle movements of mind. So the Dharma is immediately effective. I see that in just many small ways throughout my day, both in my formal practice and and just in daily life. And the fourth quality of the Dharma is often translated as inviting inspection. And this word, ahipasiko, is the Pali word, and it's a kind of famous exhortation of the Buddha: come and see for yourself. And so we're invited to just keep looking. Does the Dharma seem well expounded? Is applying the teachings immediately effective? Do we see it here and now? We pay attention to our actions, to our movements of mind. We choose to act ethically, we choose to act kindly, and we notice what the results are. Perhaps we apply mindfulness to some difficult emotion in our meditation or in our life, using the rain or the raft techniques that are spoken of so often in Dharma talks. And then we look, is there more space around the emotion? Were we kinder? Were we more balanced when we dealt with that particular situation that gave rise to some strong emotion? Do we see what it was that hooked us, the conditions that triggered the emotion? As we practice, as we keep coming back and looking, seeing, coming to see for ourselves, we understand our minds a little bit better. We get a clearer picture again and again of what makes them tick as time goes on. We keep coming back, to see for ourselves. And this might be the heart of the empirical nature of our Dharma practice. And I mentioned that all these six qualities they point to the empirical nature of the Dharma. This coming back, coming to attend to our experience again and again with curiosity, with kindness, to gradually learn to distinguish more skillfully between what leads to dukkha and what leads to more peace, more ease, more freedom. And this inspection that the Dharma invites is really supported by two factors that Sheridan Blau, the man who wrote this essay, speaks of in this essay on literacy. The first is a willingness to suspend closure, to entertain problems rather than to avoid them. And then the second is a willingness to take risks. So suspending closure and taking risks, a willingness to interpret for ourselves, to respond to our practice honestly, to what's going on honestly, and to question conventions and question accepted interpretations of the Dharma as well. As we practice and learn more about the Dharma, we don't give up if we don't understand, concepts that are unfamiliar to us, like not self, perhaps, or emptiness, or some things that seem kind of esoteric. We're encouraged to be curious. It's essential. We apply sustained attention and we stay open to what arises. We keep investigating. We don't jump to conclusions about our experience, about what it means, about what motivates us. Or if we do jump to conclusions, we recognize that and we question them. We stay open and we maybe, hopefully, we can recognize, there are other possibilities here. We continue to look. We continue to be curious. Before he was awakened, there's famous stories about the Buddha. The Buddha was asked to teach by two really highly regarded teachers who both said he had reached the pinnacle of his practice, and he was, he was ready to pass on the teachings. But the Buddha said no. He suspended closure. He felt there was more to learn, more to accomplish. He had not solved the problem of suffering. So he continued to entertain the problem. And then he changed his practice model. He came to something new. He discovered something new for himself, seeing that the conventional approach that he was following, he was doing really ascetic practice that had, you know, had him almost starving at the time, according to the stories. And he remembered a time when he'd experienced a happiness that he judged to be beneficial. And he took the risk to see where that might lead, and that where it led was to his final awakening. So I haven't solved the problem of suffering at this point, you know. And I want to be willing to engage with practice as an open question. I keep looking, what is this? What's motivating this? So the willingness to suspend closure and to take risks are both really useful as we continue to come and see for ourselves what the Dharma is, how it unfolds. Blau talks about these in terms of an intellectual courage, and I think it does take courage to not settle for easy answers, to keep an open mind, not come to a conclusion, to be curious about inconsistencies, and sometimes to change course, to take up a different practice, to start doing Brahmavihara practice, for instance, to move to a concentration practice from a mindfulness practice. It feels safe to have certainty, but feeling safe can be a way of staying stuck. So we refine our own understanding by staying open and curious, not just by swallowing everything that we're taught. We have to walk the path ourselves. No one can walk it for us. Not even the Buddha could walk it for us. It takes energy and sincere intention to keep inspecting and to stay curious. We can come to new interpretations of Dharma concepts that differ from the way we've heard them taught and understood, the way we've understood them in the past, and we can check our understanding with those we respect, accepting feedback from others, checking to see if our interpretation supports growth, you know, seeing the empirical nature of the practice. Does it move towards freedom? And if not, you know, we stay open to having our interpretation overturned. In our practice, it's so useful to question our assumptions about how practice is supposed to unfold. No, we do have assumptions about that, I believe. There's that well-known quote from Suzuki Roshi, you know, the founder of San Francisco Zen Center. In the beginner's mind are many possibilities. In the expert's, there are few. Or the Korean Zen teacher, Sung San, his advice, only don't know, something you can always kind of bring into your practice, I think. The Buddha's invitation to come and see for ourselves could be seen as an invitation to keep that beginner's mind, to stay in the place of curiosity, to stay in the place of an open question. And see, I've gone on beyond because I had, it's like, I think I was muted for about 4 minutes. I'm really sorry I wasn't paying attention to the chat. I was tied to my words. But when I was thinking about this aspect of the Dharma, I thought of this quote from Rainer Maria Rilke, you know, from his Letters to a Young Poet. That it's odd. This is another quote that's often repeated in Dharma talks, and it's quite profound, I think, you know. I want to beg you as much as I can, dear sir, to be patient toward all that is unsolved in your heart and try to love the questions themselves, like locked rooms and like books that are written in a very foreign tongue. The point is to live everything. Live the questions now. Perhaps you will then gradually, without noticing it, live along some distant day into the answers. So, immediately effective and inviting inspection Ehipasiko, come and see for yourself. Staying open to new possibilities, continuing to be curious, not coming to conclusions, being willing to look again and again. And thank you very much again today for your attention. Tomorrow we'll look at the fifth of these qualities, and I'll try to stay on top of whether I'm muted or not. And in the meantime, I encourage you to keep looking, keep living your questions with that kind and curious, interested regard for your life. So, see you tomorrow. Thanks.